Chapter 16.
We traveled nonstop for the rest of the day, and the sun arched slowly across the rainbow-colored sky to mark our progress through the mountainside. But even my feet began to slow once the orb dipped toward the western horizon. We all ate while marching and drank sparingly from our water skins, but there was no telling how long we'd need to make our rations last. Before the sun completely sunk below the edge of the sky, the runner the mole people had sent to meet us on the march trotted alongside me, and I thumped my fist against my chest in greeting to the spear-wielding mole warrior. "What news?"
"My commander, the great and powerful Amon."
"Yeah, I know who he is. Time is money, man."
"Very well,"
the mole warrior said.
"Amon sends word that the tunnels north of the King's Road are nearing completion. The workers are digging day and night, and soon it will be ready for you to use."
"Awesome," I grinned. "Tell Amon thank you for me, and let him know we are going to kick some major ass before we return home as victors."
"I shall remember your words,"
the mole warrior said, but there was a glint of confusion in his eyes.
"And pass them on to my commander."
He was gone a moment later, and I returned my focus to the marching of my army, but I decided to call a halt for the night a short while later. All around me were relieved sighs and exhausted moans, and I chuckled to myself as I searched out May and Una. I found my two lovers in a huddle with a few of my most trusted warriors, and I nodded at Shelley and Grug before I turned my gaze to the one stranger in their midst. A raccoon woman with black-streaked gray hair stood between Una and May, and her dark eyes glistened with excitement as she fiddled with the dagger strapped to her hip. "I don't believe we've met," I said, as I held out my hand to shake hers.
"Greetings, dreamer,"
the raccoon woman said, as she accepted my hand.
"The others have taught me the greeting from Earth. I am honored to exchange hands with you. My name is Kai."
"Nice to meet you, Kai," I said, as I flourished down into a bow and kissed the back of her hand. "I'm sorry for interrupting. What were you talking about?"
"Strategy,"
May explained with a tight-lipped smile.
"With the advantage of the tunnels, we have several options for attack stratagems."
"What did you have in mind?" I arched one eyebrow coolly.
"We feign an attack to draw them out."
"Then once the gate is open,"
Una said, as she bounced up and down on the balls of her feet,
"we pretend to retreat to give them a false sense of security."
"We have a few siege weapons, but not enough to ensure we breach the castle walls, so I like your plan. It's only slightly different from what we discussed back in New Haven."
"I brought maps,"
May said, as she squatted on the ground and pulled out a long cylindrical tube. The dodo woman popped the lid off and revealed a rolled up piece of paper, but when she unwound it, I saw it was a map of all the land. As far as I could tell, it showed the section of the land I'd already explored to some degree, and the road disappeared to either side of the page. I easily located the Clover Queen's fortress at the top, and I pointed to our current position halfway between the King's Road and the Sunrise Mountains. May nodded to confirm my unspoken question, and then I eyed the space between the road and the castle. I didn't know where the mole people's tunnels were, so it would take some time to acclimate ourselves to the holes, but their advantages were limitless. We were going to win this battle and then seize control of the entire map in front of me. "We can do this," I said with growing confidence. "We're going to have the Clover Queen begging for mercy before we return home."
"You may consider relocating to the fortress once you've conquered the Queen,"
May suggested with a puff of her pipe.
"It will be a good launching pad for further attacks on bordering territories."
"Good thinking," I nodded. "But we'll discuss our options when we get to that point. For now, we seek domination and vengeance. Things are bound to get inky." It seemed no one understood my joke, since none of them laughed, but I shrugged and moved on to the next order of business. "How are all the forces doing? Any fear or regret?"
"Everyone's eager to follow you into battle,"
Kai informed me with a fang-toothed grin.
"The weakest among us were given doses of a magic concoction the doctor said would help with strength and other things."
"I've heard of it. I'm glad it was used sparingly. We need to stand on our own merits."
"You brought lots of potions with you, right?"
"Grug," I called up to the large man, "do you have my sack of potions?" The big man reached into the massive fabric sack hanging from his shoulders and pulled out a secondary bag that clinked with the sounds of glass as he lowered it to my level.
"I'll keep it safe and ready for you, dreamer,"
the giant promised with a solemn nod. "Thanks," I grinned, and I jerked my chin to indicate he could put them away, but then I turned back to the ladies around me. "See? Everything's under control. Get some rest tonight. We have a long day ahead of us tomorrow."
"Before you retire,"
Una purred as she sidled up against me,
"I'd like to make sure I'm the strongest I can be for the upcoming battle. I concur with that sentiment,
May interjected, as she stepped up to my other side. The two ladies smoothly led me away from the group toward a tent that had been erected nearby, and the three of us disappeared inside in a fit of giggles. They each sucked me off once, and we were all more than satisfied by the time we fell asleep in a pile of limbs, tails, and feathers. The next morning dawned bright and early, and the army encampment was already in a buzz of activity when I exited the tent. May and Una were a step behind me, but we were all still finishing up with the final straps of our armor as we made our way out of the temporary structure. We resumed our march after a light breakfast, and I didn't worry about covering our tracks as we pressed on across the grassland in between us and the King's Road. The rainbow-colored sky slowly drained of color as we approached the black line across the landscape, and I called another halt when the paving stones came into view. The Clover Queen's fortress wasn't far on the other side of the road, and this was where we would stage our initial charge into the Clover Queen's territory. I requested a table, and one was swiftly placed beneath a canvas awning. I felt like a king as I positioned various rocks and things to represent my forces upon the surface of the map, but then I switched into an all-business mode. The Mole People's tunnels run between the King's Road and the castle, but we haven't gotten confirmation that they're ready just yet. I expect they'll be finished before the day is through, and I want an exploratory team to go in and map out their locations.
Shouldn't we rush the gates now that we're here?
Shelley asked, as she crossed her massive arms over her ample chest.
The Queen has likely been alerted to our presence already.
Exactly why we're in no hurry. If her spies and sentries are as good as ours, then she'll have seen us coming from the moment we left the mountains. Nothing has made it past the foothills, but we don't know how much she knows. She could be hiding or scared, or she could be plotting her counterattack. Either way, she hasn't sent out any of her minions, so we have a moment to think. We have to assume the worst and hope for the best.
What are your commands?
Get into the primary battle formations. I nodded to each of my trusted commanders in turn. Make sure the groups are evenly mixed and balanced.
Yes, Alex.
As you see, so it will be. I'll alert my teams.
Kai returned my nod.
The New Haveners will be pleased to see the Mole People again. But I only wish it was under more pleasant circumstances.
So do I. I flashed the animal woman a tight-lipped smile. The Clovers will regret ever pushing us out of Havenwood, and they'll soon learn they're going to get what they deserve.
Aye!
The women cheered, and I grinned as they separated into pairs to carry out my commands. Then I was left alone with the map, and I stared at the images for a long time as I tried to envision my forces moving about the landscape. I would be joining the first feigned attack, but I would also be a member of the gate team. My army was counting on me to lead, and I intended to do so by example, first and foremost. Besides, I needed to be at the front lines just in case any remaining nightmare creatures showed their dark faces. Once the first group of warriors was in formation, I strode to the front of the line and signaled everyone to move out with a wave of my hand over my head. May marched at the head of a second group included in the first wave, but Una stayed behind with the rest of the army. As soon as we discovered the locations of the Mole People's tunnels, then they could move into position across the battlefield. But in the meantime, it would do more harm than good to have everyone trampling across the road out into the open. The paving stones of the King's Road were warm under my boots as we stepped onto the path, and the wind plucked at the loose tendrils of shaggy hair protruding from the edges of my helmet. On the other side of the road, the air was gray, and the ground was a monochrome black that made me think of nothingness. It was eerie, but soon the darkness would be eradicated, and I was sure the color would return to the world. Our two groups spread out across the field in search of the opening to the tunnels below the dirt, and we quickly began to spot the plethora of entrances to the underground network of tunnels. I stared at the closest one as a mole warrior darted in and out of the hole, but then I recognized Uwu, the one who'd threatened to kill me. Even the people less hesitant to trust in me at first were aiding in the fight against darkness, and the sight warmed my heart.
We have every tunnel opening marked on the map,
a squirrel woman soon informed me after she'd saluted. Excellent, I grinned. Keep an eye on the perimeter. If there's any movement from the castle, I want to know of it. But I also want to make sure no nightmares followed our trail from the woods.
Yes, Dreamer.
The squirrel woman tilted her human head before she scurried off at a brisk pace. I returned to my map, and I quickly jotted down some basic copies of the hole locations before I passed them out amongst my generals. Once everyone knew where the tunnels were, we began to move all of our forces into position. I went with one of the lead groups once more, and I nodded at the familiar faces around me as I got into formation. We crossed the King's Road with our heads low in a half-crouch, but before the portcullis and drawbridge came into view, we darted into one of the Mole People's tunnels. Inside, torches illuminated the corridor, but the walls and floor were nothing more than hard-packed earth. We immediately followed the junction to the north, and we kept a brisk pace as we passed below several openings to the landscape above. The walls of the castle extended downward below the ground level to house the basement and sewage floors, and once the gate was secured, I planned to send a cleanup crew into them from both directions. For the moment, our goal was to approach the gates to draw out the Clover Queen's forces. Once we were within range of the moat surrounding the fortress, we rose out of the tunnels and approached the front gate. All around me, other small troops did the same thing, and we appeared to be a small force of around 50 people. But we'd popped out of the ground right below their noses.
"Look!"
a male voice shouted from the ramparts.
"Down there! Summon your queen!"
I bellowed, and I held my head up high as I glared at the clover cards manning the walls.
"I am the Dreamer, and I've come for her throne. If she surrenders, I won't take her life."
Laughter followed my words, but I continued to stare up at them.
"The Dreamer is a myth," the card called down to me. "Just an old folk tale the peasants sing to keep from turning on their own blades."
I said nothing, but my small show of force began to reach for their weapons, so I held up one hand to hold them back. The silence that followed was eerie, and I could hear the cards coughing from where I stood. No one said anything for a long time, but then I cleared my throat.
"Ahem. Actually,"
I shouted up to the guard with a grin,
"you're about to learn how very real I am."
Then I whistled loud and shrill, and Grug thundered down a predetermined path through the mole hole maze. The moles had strategically left this stretch of ground unscathed so the giant wouldn't collapse any tunnels behind him, and Grug began to pick up even more speed as he neared the castle. The clover guards shouted an alarm, and the top of the wall became a bustle of activity, but they were completely unprepared for what happened next. The first phase of the battle was coming. Grug ran straight for the fortress's drawbridge, and the giant man grabbed onto the edge of the wood with both hands before he began to yank it away from the stone walls. The great drawbridge creaked and groaned in protest, and the sounds of grinding metal filled my ears as the wheels released the chains keeping the bridge suspended. Before it was all the way to the ground, I caught a glimpse of the clover forces gathering in the courtyard, and I spotted more than one bulky, bare-chested ace among the first wave. Grug forced the drawbridge all the way to the dirt below, and then he quickly crossed the distance to me, before he lowered the bag of potions into my arms. I pulled out a couple of the small, palm-sized bottles, and I pushed them into the pockets of my pants before I handed the bag back to the giant. I said, in a voice loud enough for my people to hear, but not so loud that the enemy could make out my words.
"We sting and harry them as much as possible, then retreat into the tunnels until they send out more forces."
"Yes, Dreamer,"
came the echoed murmur, and I knew everyone was focused on the grand plan, taking control of the castle. The clover cards suddenly let out a ferocious roar as they sprang across the gap. They were all on foot, but their metallic coverings shone in the glow of the sun, which made them easy to spot among the monochrome landscape.
"Hold!"
I called, as I waited for the clover cards to cover more distance. There was no point in wasting our precious energy in a pointless charge when our goal was to taunt and maim. I waited until the card men were within range of the archers in our groups, and then I raised my sword in the air.
"Fire!"
I shouted, and a shower of arrows filled the air as the twanging of bowstrings echoed in my ears. The clover cards made no cries of pain, but the wet squelching of inky blood or the plinking of arrowheads hitting armor showed how many projectiles found purchase. The falling bodies of cards tripped others, and their formation was momentarily broken. Then the Ace of Clovers barked out some commands, and the remaining group of 20-odd clover cards regrouped behind him and continued the charge. I thought I'd killed that motherfucker in the sewer pipes, and I wondered briefly if the Dark King and the Queens could summon more of them somehow. There was no denying the image before me, but I knew I'd killed him before as well. Logical explanations were hard to come by in all the land, though, so I put it out of my mind and refocused on the attack. I signaled another volley of arrows to be unleashed, and we rained projectiles down upon them once more. But then the clover cards were too close for the ranged weapons to be efficient, so I called for the initial charge.
Die!
Grug rushed forward with a fierce roar, and he kicked away the first line of card men who rushed toward us. The clover cards flew into the air and out of sight over the walls of the castle, and I could only imagine the mess the bodies made whenever they landed. The forces screamed with violent energy as they surged forward to meet the rest of the oncoming clover cards. But I made sure to keep myself at the head of the group, and I dashed toward the ace with murderous intent.
"I killed you once, I can kill you again," I muttered, as I closed the gap between us.
But then I lifted my sword above my head, just as the ace of clovers turned to meet my gaze. The ace's sword came up to block my attack, so I swiveled with the flow of the energy in a move May had taught me. Then I pulled my blade around as the ace moved forward, and I switched hands before burying the weapon to the hilt in his lower back. The ace's spine tightened as he arched his back, but he didn't cry out until I twisted the hilt to widen the wound. The ace sputtered out as black, inky blood spurted out from his hooded face. Before he could recover from the attack in any way, I wrenched my blade free and wrapped it around his throat from behind. A swift yank brought my sword through his neck, and his head toppled from his shoulders to spray black ichor across the monochrome ground. One down. I'd seen another ace with red paint across his chest, and I was curious about the other suit the Queen of Clovers was able to use to her advantage. It showed an alliance with other minions of the Dark King, and I realized just how outnumbered the rebels truly were. Then I came face to face with him through the chaos all around me. The ace had a black hood covering his face like an executioner, and he carried a large two-handed sword in one massive fist. He was close to 7 feet tall, and I swallowed hard as I scanned over his bulging muscles on his arms and chest. There, between his abdomen and his throat, was a large red diamond, and I imagined a matching one graced his spine. It looked like I was dealt a pair of aces, and I couldn't believe my luck. Once I took care of this second asshole, I would call the retreat and move into position for the next phase of the battle, but it would certainly feel like a victory if I removed two of the strongest cards from play. I hadn't even needed my potions yet, and I knew I could take on this massive motherfucker without the aid of magic, but then it would be time to pretend to turn tail. But every action meant life or death. I controlled my breathing as I waited for the ace to make the first move, and all around me my companions waged war against the other clover cards. I stood just inside the edge of the Mushroom People's shield wall, but they left me a gap to see through, and I watched calmly as the Ace of Diamonds began to walk through his forces pressing against our shields.
"Come at me, fucker," I growled
as I twirled my sword in my grasp, but then I leapt through the gap to meet him head-on. The Ace of Diamonds roared as he lifted his large sword over his head, and I knew I would never be able to hold up the force of the blow from above, so I darted forward within the reach of his weapon. The sweep of metal behind me made the hair on the back of my neck stand on end, but my sword had instinctively found purchase in the junction between his front and back ribs. The Ace quickly recovered by squeezing me in his arms until I felt my bones begin to strain against their joints. But I managed to reach the fingers of my left hand down to the hilt of the dagger strapped to my waist. I was quickly losing oxygen, but I kept my breaths as shallow as I could while I maneuvered the weapon out of its sheath. Then I jammed it into the ace's gut, and I twisted it with as much force as I could muster. The ace's arms loosened ever so slightly, so I brought my dagger up and stabbed the meaty flesh around his armpit. My opponent let go of me to reach for the weapon stuck in his arm, and I ducked below his grasp before I yanked out my sword. In my next breath, I kicked his massive weapon out of his hand, and I dodged my dagger as he tossed it toward me. Now that my enemy was unarmed, I could take my time, and I pulled another dagger out of my boot. I tossed it by the tip of the blade, and it spun end over end until it buried itself in the ace's broad, bare chest. But the Hulk-like man merely growled before rushing at me.
"Not one for talking, huh, big guy?"
I said, as I stepped out of his way and sent him head first into the fungi guard's shields. Then I came at him from behind, and I grabbed another dagger before I launched myself onto his back with both weapons extended. I buried my blades in his shoulders, and I clung like a mountain climber to the side of a slope. My weight and the impact of my body sent the ace sprawling to the ground, and he let out another pained gurgle as blood from his stomach wound began to coat the monochrome dirt. I knew better than to think he was finished, though, so I quickly pushed myself to my feet, placed a boot on his back, and began to cut off his head. It was gruesome, and I was glad for the lack of communication as the wet, squelching sounds announced the completion of the process.
"Retreat!"
I shouted through the sounds of battle that raged all around me.
"Get back behind the line!"
My people needed no further prompting, and before I took another breath, the animal people disappeared into the tunnels. Then I hopped inside the closest hole and gasped for air as I calmed my pounding heart. Whew. I'd killed two aces in a row without the use of potions, and I was giddy with adrenaline. May's relentless lessons had definitely paid off. I glanced around at the growing number of animal warriors around me, and a smile of pride spread across my face. If only May and Una were with me to enjoy this moment. Before I could fully appreciate the small victory, the sound of a clover car jumping into the hole in the ceiling of the tunnel met my ears, and all my companions turned toward the noise in unison. Now we could pick them off one at a time from the safety of our tunnel network. I laughed out loud as I left the clover car to the animal warriors already closing in on him, and I trotted toward the south to regroup with the rest of the army and prepare for the next phase of our battle strategy. I found my lovers with the rest of the army waiting in position to surround the forces of darkness from all sides, and I quickly crossed the distance to the two beautiful animal women.
"The first wave is a success! I killed two aces!"
"That's wonderful!"
Una giggled.
"I'm so ready to show you how strong I am!"
"I'm ready to see what you've got," I said as I tweaked her nose.
"The second phase is ready at your command,"
May said, and her light blue eyes glittered with excitement.
"We merely await the emittance of more cards from the courtyard."
"You should remain back with the vanguard,"
Shelley interjected as a worried frown creased her hairy eyebrows.
"You've done enough by eliminating the first wave and tearing down the drawbridge."
"No way am I staying behind. I want to be right there beside you all when things get tough." Before the next phase, however, I wanted to take one of my potions I'd gotten from Grug so I could have the effects on hand. Fortunately, I hadn't needed them while fighting the aces, but there was no telling how long my luck would hold out. It might be better to drink one now and use the abilities it provided to advance the next stage of my plan. I reached into my pockets and grabbed one of the random potions I'd shoved inside, but I scanned over the label quickly before I popped the cork. Metal skin. Fuck yeah. I chugged the potion in its entirety, and then I tossed the empty bottle to the ground. Power surged through my limbs moments later, and heat radiated out from my chest to encompass my entire body. Then I watched as the skin beneath my armor took on a metallic sheen, and I flexed experimentally as a feeling of invincibility took hold of me. The Man of Steel had nothing on me.
"More cards are coming!"
A watcher called down from the opening to the tunnel, and everyone around me drew their weapons with loud, metallic swishing sounds. We wait until we hear them pass overhead. Then my team goes to the gate.
"Yes, Dreamer,"
my followers replied, and I nodded in approval. May and Una were stiff and rigid, and their eyes showed their single-minded focus as we all waited. In the distance, I could hear the twanging of bowstrings and the swishing of arrows flying through the air. But the noises of the archers were soon drowned out by the clashing metal sounds of sword on sword. I waited until the dirt of the ceiling began to crumble down as the clover card ran over the ground above our heads. And then I jerked my chin toward the entrance of the tunnel we occupied.
"Now!"
My army surged out of the tunnels from every direction, and the clover cards were instantly overwhelmed by the ambush attack. I couldn't resist the urge to jump into the fray, and I gestured for Una, May, and Kai to follow me as I dashed toward the open portcullis. I shoved past clover cards coming at me from every direction, but their swords did nothing to me since I had the steel covering from the potion, and even a few arrows pinged harmlessly off my metal skin. My feet hammered across the splintered wooden drawbridge like a drum, and the staccato sound of my companion's footsteps soon echoed behind me. Two clover cards stood beneath the portcullis and watched the battle raging in front of the fortress. But my lady companions darted forward to eliminate them before they even noticed our approach. Behind the three women, a small troop of animal warriors came in our wake, and we all trotted beneath the iron doorway. We split into two groups inside the gate, and I scanned the empty courtyard for more threats. But just as my eyes found a door on the far side, a clover card emerged from the portal.
"Enemies inside the gates!"
the card shouted back inside the fortress, and he whipped out his sword as he ran toward us.
"Mine!"
Una called out as she ran forward and launched herself bodily onto the clover card. The cat girl wasn't heavy enough to bear him to the ground, but then she started to tear into his armor and flesh with her bare hands. Her long, sharp nails ripped into the exposed bubble of his chest as soon as she yanked the metal covering free, and a spray of ichor announced the card man's death. More cards atop the walls began to shoot arrows toward my cat girlfriend, and I dashed across the distance to her before I shielded her with my own body. The arrows sounded like raindrops against a window pane as they struck my metal back, but I barely felt the impact of the projectiles.
"To the walls!"
I said, as I pointed to the stairs on either side of the drawbridge. Grug had managed to destroy the mechanisms controlling the drawbridge entirely, so all we had to do was stand our ground until more of our forces entered the courtyard. The splintered wooden bridge was sturdy enough to cross, but it wouldn't act as a getaway again anytime soon. May and Kai trotted in opposite directions to the stairwells on either side of the entrance to the fortress, and several animal people warriors followed each woman. Three more clover cards were shoved from the ramparts to splatter grossly across the hard paving stones of the courtyard. And then the animal women let out a cheer of victory as they stood over the broken cranks. More rebels poured into the courtyard to hold the gate from the remaining forces inside the castle. But we didn't have to wait very long before a steady stream of enemies began to pour out of the wooden door on the far side of the gate. The majority of the Clover Card army had ridden out to finish off the retreating rebels, just as I'd hoped they would. My army would ambush them from all angles, and then depart into the hidden tunnels before any damage could be done to them. I wasn't worried about the lives of my people, but I still kept my focus on the sounds of battle. I held my position beneath the portcullis as the rest of my followers dealt with the oncoming Clover Cards, and I watched with pride as enemy after enemy fell to my warrior's blade.
"Dreamer!"
May's voice came from the top of the wall.
"You'll want to see this!"
The Dodo woman pointed out toward the King's Road, where the majority of my army fought against the Clover Cards, and then a loud nickering sound cut through the din of battle to reach my ears. I raced up the stairwell to the top of the wall, and I stared in the direction May pointed as I squinted to focus my eyes. Then, in the distance, just on this side of the King's Road, came a herd of horse-like creatures. The Frisians had come to help us. I watched with glee as the animal warriors mounted the horse-like creatures' backs, and then they began to mow over the clover cards roaming the flat, hole-dotted landscape. Acting like a vengeful cavalry, the Frisian and animal people combinations annihilated the card's formation. And soon, the clovers were running back toward the castle gate. A line of fungi people popped out of the tunnels to cut off their escape, and a line of shields was held between the joined-together mushrooms. I cheered at the successful strategy, and then I glanced back down into the courtyard to check on the state of the battle being waged behind the walls. But what I saw caused my blood to run cold. A massive, all-black carriage led by a team of wild-eyed Frisians burst from behind two large double doors, and an ace whipped the beast's hind quarters as the carriage raced toward the portcullis. Through the small open window of the door, I spotted the flash of a gold crown, and I cursed under my breath. The Queen of Clovers was trying to escape. I ran for the stairwell, and I dashed into the courtyard, but I didn't stop running until I was across the drawbridge in the midst of the conflict.
"I need a Frisian!"
I shouted, and I let out a high-pitched whistle. An answering nicker echoed from nearby, and a massive Frisian stallion leapt over the piled-up bodies of clover cards into the circle of protection of the fungi people's shield wall.
"Alex!"
a tiny voice squeaked from the direction of the Frisian, but then I spotted Zidi clinging to the creature's mane.
"You said you wouldn't ever leave me behind again!"
"You're right," I chuckled as I jumped onto the Frisian's back. "But we don't have time for apologies right now. After that carriage!" Zidi spoke to the Frisian and we were off once more, but I had to lean forward and wrap my arms around the Frisian's neck as it jumped over the fungi wall. The horse-like creature thundered across the battlefield, expertly dodged the entrance to the tunnels below, and crossed the distance to the carriage as it rolled toward the King's Road. The carriage wheels bounced across the holes as the Frisians pulling it jumped over the obstacles, but it was slowed by the maze-like path through the battlefield. My Frisian mount was almost as fast as the team pulling the Queen's carriage, and we were gaining ground by the time we hit the paving stones of the King's Road. My steed hesitated slightly before galloping onto the black path, but it quickly regained its composure and returned to its former speed. The landscape slid by in my peripheral vision as I focused on the carriage ahead of me, but I was aware of the lack of color as we headed in an easterly direction.
"Faster!"
I commanded as I gasped for air. Zidi repeated my order in the Frisian's language, and the horse-like creature surged forward with a groan of effort. We were quickly gaining on the carriage, but then I noticed a black line cutting across the horizon ahead, and I squinted into the distance trying to make it focus in my vision.
"What is that?"
I asked, as a frown creased my brow.
"The black wall!"
Zidi informed me with a shiver of dread.
"I've never seen it before with my own eyes!"
"Is she going to run straight into it?"
I asked, but Zidi didn't answer. Still, we rode on, and the wall grew more clear with each passing second until it towered over our heads in both directions. The black stone seemed to absorb all light, and the dark shadows stretched across the ground in front of it. There was a single door where the road met the wall, but it was large enough for the Queen's carriage to fit through, so I leaned forward to urge my mount on even faster. The Queen of Clovers stopped her carriage in front of the door, and we quickly crossed the distance to them. The Queen jumped out from behind the wood-paneled black door and dashed toward the portal in the wall, but I saw a glint of something metallic shining from within her grasp. A key? I slid off the Frisian's back and chased after the Queen of Clovers as she approached the massive door, but I had to catch my breath as I stared up at the imposing structure. The wall had to at least be 5 stories tall, and the face of it was smooth like it had been sanded down to prevent any handholds. The door itself looked wooden, but the portal was painted black, and a large red diamond decorated the very center. The Queen of Clovers shoved what I guessed was a key into a small opening, and I pumped my legs to run even faster. There was no way I was going to let her get away from me. Then a hand grabbed the back of my neck and suddenly hauled me off my feet, and I hit the ground with a hard thud. Thanks to my metallic skin, the impact didn't even hurt, but I was disoriented. A moment later, the Ace's masked head came into view, and I groaned as I reached for my weapon. I couldn't let the Queen of Clovers get away, so I rolled to my feet and brought my blade up just in time to stave off the blow of his giant two-sided axe. The Frisian nickered and charged forward to kick out at the Ace from behind, and the movement caught my opponent off guard long enough for me to dodge his weapon and land a blow of my own. I severed his hand from his wrist, and the giant axe fell uselessly to the ground while his limbs squirted black, inky blood. Now that he was disarmed, literally, I turned back to the Queen. The Queen of Clovers glanced over her shoulder at me, and a terrified look crossed her face before she disappeared through the opening in the wall. I ran to the portal as fast as I could, but the door clicked shut in my face. I yanked hard on the door with all my might, but the thing wouldn't even budge an inch. Oh, shit! The Queen of Clovers was gone.